Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, September 5th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Early College High School Among the Top-Ranked in West Texas. U.S. News and World Report. Midland High, Legacy, Trail Most High Schools in Region, State. By Stuart Doreen, Staff Writer. Early College High School at Midland College ranked 141st of the high schools across the state, according to the 2023-24 U.S. News and World Report Best High Schools Rankings. Early College High School was the second-ranked high school in West Texas, trailing only Talkington School for Young Women Leaders in Lubbock, number 22. Early College was a shining star for Midland ISD. Midland High and Legacy both ranked in a group of high schools across the state with rankings between 1,258 and 1,532. Other rankings from around the region included 620th at Grady High School, 659th at Andrews High School, 669th at Garden City High School, 1,064th at Greenwood High School, 1,183rd at Stanton High School, and 1,258th at Big Spring High School. U.S. News and World Report listed the following rankings for Odessa schools: 354th at George H.W. Bush New Tech, Odessa, 1,046th at Odessa Career and Technical Early College High School, and 1,063rd at Odessa Collegiate Academy Early College High School. Odessa High and Permian High joined Midland High and Legacy in the group between 1,258 and 1,532. What else the rankings told us? Ahead of Early College High School at Midland College included 21 Early College High Schools from around the state. That does not include so-called collegiate preps or collegiate high schools. The top-ranked Early College High School was found in Laredo, number 13, McAllen, number 15, Houston, number 21, Brownsville, number 32, and Dallas, number 36, rounded out the five highest-ranked early college schools. There were 16 IDEA Public Schools high schools ranked ahead of Early College High School at Midland College, including 13 in the top 100. The top-ranked IDEA Public Schools campus was located in Brownsville, number 16. Campuses in McAllen, number 20, San Antonio, number 25, and two in Edinburgh, numbers 26 and 33, rounded out IDEA's top five. Midland's IDEA Public Schools campus, IDEA Travis, has not yet graduated a class and was not ranked. The Young Women's Preparatory Network, which includes Young Women's Leadership Academy in Midland, put six campuses in the top 23 across the state, including campuses in Dallas, number 2, Houston, number 10, Austin, number 11, San Antonio, number 14, and Lubbock. Like IDEA Travis, Young Women's Leadership Academy also has not yet graduated its first class and was not ranked. Midland ISD versus other larger West Texas cities. While Early College High School at Midland College held its own versus the rest of the state, Midland High and Legacy High found task at hand more difficult. Taking into account schools from Amarillo, Lubbock, San Angelo, and Abilene, only one campus found itself in the group, ranked 1238 to 1532, with Legacy High and Midland High. That was Lakeview High in San Angelo. school rankings from the other larger West Texas cities included Lubbock, Talkington School for Young Women's Leaders, number 22, Lubbock High, 399, Coronado High School, 996, Monterey High School, 1186. Cooper ISD, Lubbock Cooper, number 454. Friendship ISD, Wolforth Friendship, number 418. San Angelo ISD, Central High School, 1135. Abilene ISD, Academy for Technology, Engineering, Math, and Science, number 236. Abilene High, 612. And Abilene Cooper, 613. Amarillo ISD, Amarillo High, number 303, Palo Duro, 623, Tascosa, 677, Caprock, 763. What U.S. News said about Midland County Schools. About Early College High School at Midland College is ranked 141st within Texas. Students have the opportunity to take advanced placement coursework and exams. The AP participation rate at Early College High School at Midland College is 86%. The total minority enrollment is 84%, and 33% of students are economically disadvantaged. Early College High School at Midland College is one of five high schools in the Midland Independent School District. About Greenwood High School is ranked 1,064th within Texas. Students have the opportunity to take advanced placement coursework and exams. The AP participation rate at Greenwood High School is 14%. The total minority enrollment is 54%, and 22% of students are economically disadvantaged. Greenwood High School is the only high school in the Greenwood Independent School District. About Legacy High School is ranked 1,258 to 1,532nd within Texas. Students have the opportunity to take advanced placement coursework and exams. The AP participation rate at Legacy High School is 32%. The total minority enrollment is 75%, and 36% of students are economically disadvantaged. Legacy High School is one of five high schools in the Midland Independent School District. About Midland High School is ranked 1,258 to 1,532nd within Texas. Students have the opportunity to take advanced placement coursework and exams. The AP participation rate at Midland High School is 38%. The total minority enrollment is 79%, and 43% of students are economically disadvantaged. Midland High School is one of five high schools in the Midland Independent School District. The U.S. News and World Report rankings showed the following graduation rates. 100% at Early College High School at Midland College, 94% at Greenwood High School, 92% at Midland High School, and 91% at Legacy High School. The report also showed college readiness, which U.S. News stated was the proportions of 12th graders who took and earned a qualifying score on at least one AP or IB exam. Earning a qualifying score is worth three times more than just taking. The following were reported as scores for Midland County high schools: 38.6% at ECHS at MC, 20.7 at Legacy High School, 18.1 for Midland High, and 5.5 for Greenwood High School. This article is entitled, Two Earthquakes Have Been Reported Southeast of Midland Since Wednesday, USGS Says, by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. Two earthquakes have been reported within 6.2 miles of Midland since Wednesday evening, according to the U.S. Geological Survey. the USGS reported a 2.5 magnitude earthquake around 11:23 p.m. Wednesday. The quake happened around 6.2 miles south-southeast of Midland at a depth of 5.2 miles. The second quake happened at 4:13 a.m. Friday, around 5.5 miles southeast of Midland. It was a 2.7 magnitude tremor that took place at a depth of around 6.1 miles. The website EarthquakeTrack.com reported Sunday that there had been three earthquakes in the Midland-Lamesa-Stanton region in the past week, 14 in the past 30 days, and 191 in the past 365 days. By contrast, there were 23 quakes this week around Mentone in far west Texas. EarthquakeTrack.com also reported Sunday there were 169 in the past 30 days and 2,170 in the past 365 days. The strongest quake around Mentone in the past 7 days was 2.7 magnitude. This article is entitled DA. Jury sentences Midlander to 35 years for child sex abuse. By Stuart Doreen, staff writer. A 33-year-old Midland man was sentenced late Friday to a term of 35 years in prison by a Midland County jury, according to Midland County District Attorney Laura Nodolph. Shane Kendall Lindsay, 33, was charged with the offense of continuous sexual abuse of a young child, according to a news release. After hearing evidence for most of the week, the jury found Lindsay guilty of the offense on Friday afternoon after a morning of deliberations. After additional evidence presented during the punishment phase of the trial, the same jury then deliberated for part of the afternoon before announcing the verdict of 35 years in prison near the end of the day on Friday, the news release stated. The evidence presented in the case showed that the defendant committed acts of sexual abuse on multiple occasions against a 9-year-old female relative, leading up to 2018, when the victim finally made an outcry that led to an investigation by the Midland Police Department, according to the news release. After the investigation, including an interview at the Midland Children's Advocacy Center, where the victim was able to describe in graphic detail the acts committed, Lindsay was arrested. Among the evidence presented to the jury was a partial confession made by the defendant during the investigation, the release stated. Because the defendant was convicted of the charge of continuous sexual abuse of a young child, he will not be eligible to be considered for parole and must serve his entire sentence. The case was prosecuted by the Midland County District Attorney's Office. The trial was held in the 385th District Court and presided over by Judge Leah G. Robertson. This article is entitled Dry Conditions in Midland Hit New Level. Becomes first Permian Basin county to hit 700 on Keach-Byram Drought Index. By Stuart Doreen, staff writer. The high temperatures and lack of rainfall in the region has forced Midland into a rare level of drought conditions. The Texas Forest Service on Monday showed Midland to become the first Permian Basin county to hit 700 on its Keach-Byram Drought Index, which is used to determine drought conditions. The index showed Midland County with a rating of 701 inside the county. The Forest Service showed the range of drought conditions inside the county ranged from 623 to 756. Midland had already been inside the Keach-Byram Index's highest range as a county, 600 to 800, which is, quote, often associated with more severe drought with increased wildfire occurrence. Intense, deep-burning fires with extreme intensities can be expected. Live fuels can also be expected to burn actively at these levels, unquote. Other index scores across the region include 683 in Martin County, 675 in Howard County, 667 in Ector County, 632 in Andrews County, and 603 in Glasscock County. In late July, Midland County leaders decided on a burn ban for Midland after the Keach-Byram Drought Index showed a reading of 581. Midland County Fire Marshal Justin Bunch has told the Reporter-Telegram that the county will not enact a burn ban until our KBI is at or above 575. Conditions haven't improved, thanks in part to the lack of rainfall. The last rainfall at Midland International Airport happened on July 1st, 0.33 inches. Heading into September 4th, the National Weather Service had measured 1.79 inches at Midland International this year. That total is one of the driest starts to a year in Midland's history, and 7.7 inches below normal year to date. Coincidentally, there is a 10% chance of rain on Tuesday in Midland, according to the NWS. Midland does have considerable company in the Keach-Byram 700 Club across the state, according to the Texas Forest Service, which on Monday show 122 counties across the state with index readings at or above 700. A vast majority of East Texas, from the Red River to the Gulf Coast, were included in this block of drought-stricken counties. This article is entitled MFD, Officials Investigate RV Fire Northwest of Midland, by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. One person was displaced after a Saturday evening RV fire inside Midland County, according to the Midland Fire Department. The City of Midland reported that crews with the Midland Fire Department responded around 8:15 p.m. to an RV fire in the 6700 block of North County Road 1297. There were no injuries reported, but the American Red Cross is assisting one displaced resident. The cause of the fire is under investigation. This article is entitled Midland Records First 100-Degree High Since August 21st, by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. The record high temperature for September 4th in Midland was tied on Monday during a hot Labor Day holiday. The National Weather Service reported a high temperature of 101 degrees, which tied the record set in 1984. The NWS reported that the triple-digit high temperature could be the first of six straight, as 100-degree temperatures are expected through Saturday, including a high temperature of 103 degrees on Tuesday. The National Weather Service also put a chance of rain in the forecast on Tuesday, 10%. The 100-degree heat was the first in Midland since August 21st, or the first in 14 days, according to the NWS. There have been 52 days with 100-degree high temperatures in 2023, which is tied for second most in a year in Midland's history. Monday's report? Monday's high, 101 degrees, tied a record. Typical high for September 4th, 91 degrees. Monday's low, 74 degrees. Typical low for September 4th, 68 degrees. Record high for September 4th, 101 degrees, set in 1984 and tied Monday. Last 3 days. Saturday, 98 degrees. Sunday, 99 degrees. Monday, 101 degrees. Next 3 days. Tuesday, 103 degrees. Wednesday, 100 degrees. Thursday, 100 degrees. The source of this article, the National Weather Service. This article is entitled Midland's Growth May Mean Rising City Tax Bills, by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. City of Midland property taxes aren't likely to be going down anytime soon. City staff and council members said as much last week during a special meeting when the Midland City Council approved the fiscal year 2023-24 budget and tax rate. City leaders said additional expenses will continue to come before the council, including the money needed to help make the Midland Firemen's Relief and Retirement Fund whole again. In June, city leaders and Midland firefighters announced that the Midland Firemen's Relief and Retirement Fund is underfunded by $109 million. In early August, city leaders stated that changes voted on by the Midland Fire Department members have dropped that liability by $9 million. City leaders also stated that the city and firefighters will work with a financial committee and actuarial consulting firm to reduce the liability more. Last week, city leaders expected that the general fund, which is supported by property tax and sales tax, will be required to help make firefighters whole, even if city leaders make the decision to go to the voters to approve a general obligation bond. City leaders have previously stated that an election is likely in 2024. The Midland City Council also, by a 5-2 vote, approved an increase in the tax rate that is likely to raise the city's portion of the tax bill on the average home from $1,153.87 to $1,253.61. The City of Midland also showed that around 17% of the approved tax rate will cover city debt service, $12.413 million. Last week, city staff suggested, and the mayor recognized, the role of city leaders previously in setting tax rates that left revenue on the table. City staff showed that total tax revenue lost over the last 10 years, compounded, was $173.416 million and $445 million over the last 15 years. Blong commented on the tax rate decisions of the past during the meeting Tuesday. The money we have left on the table in the past, had we made selections in the past to go ahead to keep those rates higher, we would be in a different position with fund balance to be able to invest in that more fully, said Blong, who also said that it is important to keep that tax rate at a place where the Midland City Council can make an investment in the fire and pension fund. City Council members also have talked about goals to improve and maintain parks, senior centers, and the City of Midland Health Department, to move forward on the $35 million Beale Park Soccer Complex project, to put 5 new officers on the books every year, to improve road infrastructure, including purchase right-of-way, to build a multi-million-dollar police fire training center, to develop an entertainment district downtown, to improve and maintain the Scarborough Sports Complex, and even to build a new city hall. Potential funding sources include the city's savings account, the Oil and Gas Parks Fund, Hotel Motel Tax Fund, and the General Fund. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled, Oil Executives Bullish on China, by Alfred Kang and Yongchan Chin, Bloomberg News. Doom-laden stories about China's economy aren't portraying an accurate picture of energy demand in the top crude importer, according to oil luminaries at a major conference in Asia. There's a lot that's good about what's going on in China, Ben Luckcock, co-head of oil trading at Trafigura Group, told hundreds of attendees at the APEC by S&P Global Commodity Insights in Singapore on Monday. In terms of China demand, the property market is bad, but the other parts of the economy aren't. China's crude oil imports were a relative bright spot in the first half, and demand growth is expected to account for 40% of the global total this year. Jet fuel consumption could rise 90% in the second half from a year earlier, according to Sinopec. Beijing is also issuing larger-than-normal fuel export quotas to help juice growth. The optimism on oil shows how pockets of China's economy are holding up, despite the overall slowdown in growth. The price of steelmaking staple iron ore, for example, has performed relatively well, despite a parade of negative headlines on the property sector. This column is called Opinion. It is entitled, A Fiscal Conservative Can Support a $1.4 Billion Bond, by Ronnie Scott, guest columnist. Ronnie Scott is Chief Executive Officer of Development Capital Resources, a member of the board of the Midland Chamber of Commerce, and a member of the board of the Henry Foundation. He was a founding director at Educate Midland and previously a board member of Clayton Williams Energy Incorporated. I have worked on 5 separate long-range facility planning efforts with MISD over the last 10 years. I disagreed with the recommendations from 3 of the 5. I strongly support the latest one. Why? First, I believe this bond is about more than facilities. I believe it will improve educational outcomes as follows. Quality pre-K is one of the few proven ways to increase educational achievement. This bond will add more than 1,500 pre-K seats. Midland College's new 4-year degree in their Center for Teaching Excellence will help supply qualified teachers for these seats. Over its first decade, the bond will allow 15,000 additional children to have the benefit of a quality pre-K education. This is potentially huge. Technology has begun to play a big role in 21st century education. MISD now provides each student with a portable computer in the form of Chromebooks. Unfortunately, they don't have enough outlets to charge them. This bond will allow for more robust Wi-Fi and charging platforms across all our secondary campuses, so we can actually use the technology that is available. This bond will help us make these computers operable. Realignment is next. It took me a while to realize that realignment is more than a buzzword, that it could actually improve educational achievement. By moving 6th grade onto middle school campuses, these students will begin to have teachers specializing in the subject matter in math, science, and English. It will be much easier to find subject-specific teachers on 6 middle school campuses rather than 21 elementary campuses, particularly when those teachers can now be shared across 6th, 7th, and 8th grades. This shift will align our grade configuration with the state of Texas curriculum and the 90%+ of districts across the state who have already undertaken realignment. There will be similar educational advantages to having 9th graders on campus with their 10th to 12th grade academic counterparts. We are behind where we want to be in pre-K, the expansion of technology, and alignment with teaching curriculums, and wonder why our educational outcomes suffer. This bond will begin to help address those things. The bond will also address capacity issues for our 28,000 and growing student body. We have reached a point at many campuses where portable buildings no longer address MISD's increased capacity. While they provide classroom space, they do not address overcrowding in core facilities like cafeterias, libraries, gyms, auditoriums, pickup and drop-off zones, and parking. Our principals are having to develop logistics expertise at a time when we need them to be focused on instructional improvement and discipline. I consider myself to be fiscally conservative. That is not the same as being anti-tax. Rather, it means that when my taxes are collected, I want them to be spent on important things, to be spent efficiently, to be managed well, and to be spent when and where it is most appropriate to do so. Oil production in Midland County has increased by a factor of 20 over the last 12 years, from 30,000 barrels per day to over 600,000 barrels per day. We have been truly and uniquely blessed. Everything I see points to local oil production being robust for another 10 or even 15 years. But production will decline at some point. As a residential property taxpayer, I want the property taxes associated with this oil production to help pay for the schools, parks, roadwork, and other infrastructure necessary to accommodate the influx of people associated with the increased oil production. Said another way, I want to construct all the school buildings and parks and roads I think Midland will need over the next 15 years as quickly as possible, so that we can take advantage of the property taxes that will be paid over that period by commercial oil and gas production. The longer we wait, the less these commercial interests will pay, and the more we will have to pay as homeowners. The people probably aren't going anywhere, but the property tax revenue associated with oil production in Midland County will certainly decline at some point. Has MISD done a good job of stewarding its capital budget? I would say yes. If they keep the tax rate flat for one more year, MISD will be debt-free. Very few districts in the country will be able to say that. They continue to get A's from the state on their financial accountability ratings. Could I pick at them about maintenance issues and the like? I could, but I would remind everyone that when MISD tried to increase maintenance taxes in 2016, Midland voted it down. Even so, we may be debt-free next year, while having sent almost $1 billion back to the state in terms of Robin Hood payments, while lowering our tax rates from $1.12 per $100 of valuation in 2018 to under 92 cents in 2023. Perfect? No. But has MISD been fiscally responsible on the capital side of things? It would seem so. Finally, I don't want to get too tied up in the details. Would I prefer three smaller high schools rather than two larger ones? Yes. Would I like to see us add two or three elementary schools rather than one? Yes. Are there other things I would like to see in this bond or excluded from this bond? Yes. But I am not seeking perfection, nor do I have to get my way on everything. I think this is a reasonable bond that addresses many of our most critical facility needs, including safety, security, and capacity. Do I want MISD's performance to improve? I absolutely do. This bond alone won't do it. But we need to give MISD more tools, more pre-K seats, more access to technology, more subject matter experts in the classroom, and more room for the students in the classroom rather than packing them in. We can't give MISD half a toolbox and expect them to deliver finished results. Financially, I think we need to move forward as quickly as we can to take maximum advantage of the taxes associated with Midland County's oil and gas production. For only the second time out of five in the last decade, I support MISD's current facility plan, and I will vote yes for the bond in November. This article is entitled, Things to Know in Midland This Week. State of Education, MISD District 7 Special Election, and more coming up. By Stuart Doreen, Staff Writer. The Midland Chamber of Commerce will have its State of Education event Wednesday at the Bush Convention Center. Midland ISD Superintendent Stephanie Howard will deliver the keynote address at the luncheon, which is scheduled to begin at 11 a.m. The event also will include a panel discussion with Midland College President Damon Kennedy, Midland Mayor Lori Blong, and ProPetro CEO and Director Sam Sledge. The panel's moderator will be Evan Thomas, Chief Operating Officer of the Chamber. For more information, go to www.midlandtx-chamber.com. Midland ISD District 7 Race. This week, Brian Murray will learn if he gets competition for the special election to fill out the remainder of the term for the school board representative for District 7, generally Northwest Midland. Murray filled the seat before resigning it, so Midland ISD could hire his sons to coach football and teach at Legacy High School. The deadline for candidates to file for the special election is Wednesday. For more information, visit midlandisd.net/board and click on Special Election November 2023 or email cynthia.mcnabb@midlandisd.net. The election will take place on November 7th, along with the $1.4 billion school bond. Blazing hot temperatures. The run of 100-degree high temperatures is expected to continue into September, including an expected high temperature of 104 degrees on Tuesday. Should the National Weather Service forecast be correct, the high on Tuesday would tie a record for September 5th that was set in 1948. Going into Labor Day, there had been 51 100-degree days in Midland this year. If the 100-degree high temperatures continue through Friday, as expected, then 2023 will have had more 100-degree days than any other year in Midland, except 2011, when there were 65 days of triple-digit high temperatures. Air Show in the Sky. The latest rendition of Air Show is set to take place Saturday and Sunday at Midland International Airport. Air Show is a presentation of vintage military aircraft and popular civilian aerobatic performers. Those attending have the opportunity to get close to the aircraft and see them perform in ways they wouldn't experience anywhere else, according to the Air Show website. There are also simulated bombing raids, strafing runs, and the infamous Wall of Fire. This is Air Show's 32nd anniversary. Tickets can be purchased online for $10, ages 14 and up, and $5, ages 6 to 13. Admission is free for ages 5 and under. Ticket upgrades and VIP parking also are available. Online, www.air-show.org. This article is entitled, Haley Set to Return to Midland. Presidential hopeful scheduled to come back for October fundraiser. By Stuart Doreen, staff writer. Nikki Haley is scheduled to return to Midland for another fundraiser as she competes for the Republican nomination for president. A fundraiser for the former South Carolina governor and the former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations is scheduled to take place on October 5th, according to an invitation to the event. The host committee includes Melissa and Bill Bergman, Allison and Reese Boudreau, Penelope and Don Evans, Marion and Tim Goudeau, Shelley and Jack Harper, Leslie and Craig McDonald, Earl and Tricia Mitchie, Dodie and Steve Mills, Carla Milson, Ellen and Scott Ramsey, Brian Sheffield, Jill and Monty Sparkman, and Rick Yaden and Becky Meister, according to the invitation. The schedule shows a host committee reception at 5:30 p.m. and a general reception at 6 p.m. Host and participation levels, according to the invitation, include $13,200, couple primary and general max, $6,600, individual primary and general max, $3,300, individual primary max, $1,000, $500, and $250. The location will be provided upon RSVP. Those interested should contact Jennifer Nadler at jennifer@jennifernadler.com or Kate Tankersley at kate@katetankersley.com. This will be Haley's second fundraising trip to Midland since June. It was then when she toured a rig inside Martin County and participated in a fundraiser in Midland. RealClairPolitics.com shows Haley running third in the Wall Street Journal's latest GOP primary poll. The top five were former President Donald Trump, 59%, Ron DeSantis, 13%, Haley, 8%, Vivek Ramaswamy, 5%, and Chris Christie, 3%.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, September 5th. District to launch bond information campaign. Ector County ISD is going for a $436,109,000 three-proposition bond in the November 7 election that won't require a tax increase, officials say. Since 2020, ECISD has made early payments of $37.3 million in existing bonds and brought by prepayment and refinancing eliminated $26.9 million in future interest payments, its website detailed. Based upon the district's existing tax base, the district would not need to increase the total tax rate of $1.17792 to pay the $436,109,000 of bond projects, the site says. Superintendent Scott Murray said, "There also is further tax rate compression coming due to action by the legislature. One of the things that we're able to do at the district level is pay off our debt early, much as a homeowner might make extra payments and pay off their debt early. What that does is instead of your 30-year mortgage lasting for 30 years, it may only last for 20 years. You save all that interest. At the district level, we have been able to pay off our debt early by making extra payments. That has saved us, thus far, about $27 million in interest that we would have paid over the life of the bond," Murray said. He added that this is a win for the taxpayers. "That creates bond capacity. Because we paid down all our debt, we now have the capacity to take on more debt with the same payment. We can continue to make the payment without raising the payment and take on more debt. For us, we can do $437 million worth of new debt and the payment won't go up," Murray said. With the passage of a property tax cut by the legislature, part of the new law will go for voter approval in November. So you and I, as taxpayers, will actually be voting, do we want to lower our taxes? I have a feeling that will pass, Murray said. Another part of it is tax compression, and that simply is the state paying more school tax than they do now. Basically, it's, hey, school district, you don't need to collect as many taxes. We as a state are going to pay for some of that, and that's what's happening. So we will compress our taxes and the state will pick up the difference that we're not collecting. That's what's coming in September, he said. For years, most of the school funding burden has fallen on local taxpayers. You can see that when you look at our school budget. You can see that the majority of it is the local property taxes, and it's starting to shift in which more and more of it is the state and not as much the local, Murray said. There are some people who will not believe taxes won't go up until they see their first tax bill. The state passed a law years ago that said once you reach the age of 65, your taxes are frozen. There are those that don't believe that. You actually have to reach 65, get the bill yourself, and realize, oh, that's the same as last year. Well, yes, it is, because the law says your taxes will not go up unless you modify your house in some way, Murray said. He added that the district will conduct an information campaign on the bond and already has events lined up. We want the information to be in the hands of every voter and taxpayer in the community, and so we will seek out opportunities. In fact, we've already started lining up opportunities in the community for meetings. The further campaign probably won't start until mid to late September. Early voting for the November 7th election runs from October 23rd to November 3rd. We want voters to be well informed before they go to the polls and vote. An informed voter is a good voter. You want to know what you're saying yes or no to. It's up to us as a district to make sure that the people have the information they need, Murray said. As a superintendent, once the board called the election, he called neither be nor against the bond until election day. The board members, they're a little different. They have to be on the information campaign when they're on school property and really when they're functioning as a board member. If one of our board members goes out and has a meeting as a board member, they can either be for or against, but as a board member, knock on doors, yes, they can, but as a citizen, Murray said. They can say as a citizen of this community, they can express their feelings about the bond. Board members can have signs in their yard. Board members can talk to people about the bond and advocate for it. Unless they claim that they're a board member, if my name is Scott and I'm a board member, well, now you have to be neutral. But as long as our board members are citizens and parents, and as long as they're paying the different roles, then they can certainly engage in any way they want to, Murray said. As a teacher at work, they have to be neutral and just give information. But after hours, a teacher can have a sign in their yard. They can advocate for or against. They can do anything they want. But during the school day, you know, Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, you're on the clock, so your information. Board members are similar, he added. There are three propositions in the bond, which also includes money to buy land for a new middle school and career and technical education center. Murray said he wants people to know what's in the bond, but also why it's needed. Proposition A is the largest at more than $420 million. It includes a new middle school, a new career and technical education facility, a new transition learning center for special education replacing the current one, a new transportation facility, expenditures in fine and performing arts, athletics, and ROTC. There are also a lot of maintenance items in Proposition A, including plumbing, wiring, HVAC, systems that are getting to the end of their life cycle and have to be replaced. There also are technology items, like the district's phone system, that are going to expire and have to be replaced. Proposition B is for Ratliff Stadium. The concrete in the 40-year-old venue has to be resurfaced as it is cracking. We need that stadium to stand the test of time. We don't want to have to replace it. We'd like to be there for a longer period of time, and so that's why we're doing it, is because it's cracking and it needs to be sealed to prevent future decay, Murray said. There is also money in that proposition for lighting the stadium parking lot. We don't have lights in the parking lot, Murray said. Proposition C includes building a new indoor practice facility for Odessa High School and replacing the turf at the indoor practice facility at Permian High School. The PHS turf is 17 years old and should be replaced 7 years ago, he said. In its information campaign, Murray said the district will leverage print, media, social media, community meetings, a variety of different things. My ask would be that people find out truth. Facebook isn't necessarily the place to get news or accurate information. You might find news there, but is it real news? Is it authentic? Is it truthful? I think there's always a question people should ask, Murray said. I hope that our public would seek truth. If Proposition A calls for a new middle school, why does the district need a new middle school? Those are answers that we should be able to provide to the community. We will provide actual, factual answers. They won't be pro or con because we can't be. It's here, the truth, he added. I would just hope that no matter how the public gets their information, that the public gets factual information, and then you can make a smart choice as a member of the public when you go to vote. You need the right information so you can make the right decision that makes sense for you. Murray noted that there is a Bond 2023 section on the ECISD website at ectorcountyisd.org/bond2023. I encourage members of our community to visit that. It will be updated on a regular basis with opportunities for face-to-face conversations. We'll also do a couple of ECISD Lives to first talk about the bond and then answer questions from the public about the bond. Then out in the community, whether it's the Rotary Club or a church group or another kind of civic organization, we will be out in public. If there is a group that is interested in having the district come in, do a presentation about the bond, then they can reach out to Chief Communications Officer Mike Adkins to schedule those, Murray said. The communications office can be reached at 432-456-9019. He added that no matter their stance, the group wants to have the information. Along with community groups, churches, and others, ECISD will also present bond information internally. Murray said they will visit all 45 campuses between the middle of September and the end of October, as well as all departments and divisions. Murray added that he encourages the public to educate themselves on the bond to make an informed decision at the ballot box. We have almost 86,000 registered voters in Ector County, and so we should see 86,000 people coming to the polls to make a decision about the children in our community. I'd love to see that. We've made it easy. So we've worked with the elections office to add multiple early voting locations, which last time we had one. Now we have three, one in the west, one in central, one at east. It makes it easier for people to do early voting. We've expanded the time of early voting. The last 4 days are 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. That expanded time allows more people to have access to early voting. Then, of course, Election Day. There are election sites all over our community, Murray said. The information is on the Ector County Elections Office website, www.co.ector.tx.us/page/ector.elections. Stop leads to drug arrest. Expired tags and erratic driving led to a 48-year-old woman being arrested on drug charges early Friday morning. According to an Ector County Sheriff's Office report, a deputy noticed a Ford Ranger with expired tags swerving off the road while traveling on West Mockingbird Lane around 12:30 a.m. When the deputy pulled the truck over, Melissa DeVia Workman gave him permission to search it, and he found 5 codeine acetaminophen pills. She didn't have a prescription for in her purse, along with 11.9 grams of methamphetamine, the report stated. She was booked into the Ector County Jail on suspicion of possession of a controlled substance and possession of a dangerous drug. She was released Saturday after posting surety bonds totaling $37,500. Ector County man facing indecency charge. A 48-year-old Ector County man was arrested early Monday morning after an 8-year-old girl told a forensic interviewer he touched her inappropriately. Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths said dispatchers received a call from a home in the 7,000 block of Sprague Road shortly after 4 a.m. from a woman who said her daughter told her the man had touched her privates. The girl later repeated the allegation to a forensic interviewer at Harmony Home Children's Advocacy Center, Griffiths said. Guillermo Carrasco Lujan was arrested on suspicion of indecency with a child, sexual contact. No bail has yet been set. First in Texas announces grants for new robotics teams in underserved rural communities. Edinburgh First in Texas, a nonprofit organization dedicated to inspiring K through 12th grade students in science, technology, engineering, and math, STEM, recently announced the availability of more than $700,000 in grants for new and existing FIRST Robotics teams in Texas. These grants aimed to extend STEM opportunities to underserved and rural communities across the state of Texas by a mentor-led six-month journey, including the building, coding, and competing a robot in a task-based robotics program. The grants, made possible by gracious sponsors, will provide financial support for the purchase of equipment and payment of registration fees, removing significant financial barriers to entry. FIRST in Texas is committed to expanding the reach of its proven STEM program, which annually involves more than 30,000 students across the state, in fostering 21st century skills, teamwork, and competitive spirit in a robust University Interscholastic League, UIL, partnered program. We offer both in-person and remote participation. Our priority is the safety and inspiration of our students, Jason Arms, executive director of FIRST in Texas, said in a news release. These grants make it possible for more students to access invaluable STEM education and personal growth experiences, irrespective of their financial situation or geographical location. Applications for the grant are already being accepted. Schools, educators, and communities are invited to take advantage of this opportunity to join the FIRST in Texas family and make a lasting impact on youth education, the release said. For more information about FIRST in Texas Robotics and the grant, visit firstintexas.org or email info@firstintexas.org. Don't miss this exciting opportunity while funds remain. FIRST in Texas is a nonprofit organization founded in 2010 that serves more than 30,000 K through 12 students in 254 counties each year, supported by a dedicated volunteer base of 7,000 individuals. The organization works diligently to inspire young minds in STEM while ensuring their safety, well-being, and future readiness.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.